The moment we begin to fear the opinions of others and hesitate to tell the truth that is in us, and from the motives of policy are silent when we should speak, the divine floods of light and life no longer flow into our souls. And this week's opening quote comes from Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Lately, as you have no doubt noticed, I've been putting a great deal of focus on the lost nation of Tartaria, the lost culture, civilization of Tartaria, that had existed mainly in Europe, but had spread itself out to encompass most of the known world, or a good portion of the known world anyway. And it is a culture that was expunged from history around about the middle of the 19th century. And even looking at that, well, I would suggest that it wasn't actually the middle of the 19th century the final expunging happened, but actually in the middle of the 20th century, even later than what I thought it was. And for many people who are wondering about this and wondering about the existence of Tartaria and whether it was actually a real nation, it can be found on maps from the 1400s and 1500s, pretty well anything before about the 1700s or 1800s, you'll find Tartaria on these maps. So I would suggest that the war to remove Tartaria from history and the war to destroy Tartaria very likely happened around the 16th or 17th century, very likely began around then. But as I said, it wasn't completed until as late as the middle of the 20th century. And as I said, early maps, you can find this, and you can see the growth of the nation as well. If you look at maps from the 1400s and 1500s, you can see that it starts off with Tartaria being a reasonably sized country in northern Europe, and then it progresses, and it also begins to encompass areas of around near the Philippines. And then we see South America being colored the same color as Tartaria, and eventually we see North America becoming part of Tartaria as well, according to these maps. And a very interesting thing that happened to me in response to the last radio show, and honestly, folks, in response to the last three radio shows, I think I've received around about 200 or 300 emails a week in response to this show. So if you're someone out there who's waiting for a response to an email, I think you're going to be waiting for a little while, folks, because I simply cannot keep up with the amount of emails I've got coming in. But anyway, one of the emails that I did get sent to me in response to the last radio show was a declassified CIA document that actually mentions Tartaria and mentions that Tartaria was being erased from history as late as 1944, near the end of World War II. And just to put this in context in how it's presented in this document, I mean, we all know that history is written by the winners, and that whenever any particular nation wins a war against another country, they generally rewrite the history to portray themselves in a positive light. For example, if you look at English history or Russian history, you'll find that the British and Russian really never did anything wrong. When you look at their own history of the events, it was always the other guys who were the bad guys, and they were always going into the places they went to heal the situation or to improve the situation or to bring civilization to the natives or some kind benevolent purpose. This is what we're always told in history books. I mean, we can kind of read between the lines and know differently, but generally when you read the history of a country, if that country is the one who wrote that history, then that country itself will always be portrayed in a positive light. Of course they will. That's just the way they do it. So bearing that in mind and taking that into account, when looking at this CIA document, you can see the excuse that they've created for rewriting the history. And you can tell that the authors of the document are, of course, attempting to portray the West in a positive light. And the CIA are attempting to put all blame onto the Russians for doing this and wiping out the Tartarian history. But, of course, they've done it as well, because you don't find it in American history books. But they've used the event to try to portray the Russians in a bad light. But the real crux of the biscuit here, the real interesting point about it, is the fact that they mention the destruction of Tartarian history. And again, Tartaria is a country that nobody even seems to know existed. There was a huge worldwide power, according to the maps. It isn't in any history books in any countries, not just the Russians. It is in American history books. It isn't in any country's history books. And yet here it is being mentioned in this document, which was declassified in 1999 and is referencing a meeting that took place in 1944. And the document is called National Cultural Development Under Communism, and it was created in June 1957 and, as I said, was approved for release on the 25th of August 1999. And in reference to Tartaria, what it says on page 10 of this document is extremely interesting. It says, and I quote, "Or let us take the matter of history, which, along with religion, language, and literature, constitute the core of a people's cultural heritage. Here again, the communists have interfered in a shameless manner. For example, on 9th August 1944, the Central Committee for the Communist Party sitting in Moscow issued a directive ordering the party's Tatar Provincial Committee to proceed to a scientific revision of the history of Tartaria to liquidate serious shortcomings and mistakes of a nationalistic character committed by individual writers and historians in dealing with Tatar history. In other words, Tatar history was to be rewritten. Let us be frank, was to be falsified in order to eliminate references to greater Russian aggressions and to hide the facts of the real course of Tatar-Russian relations. And this was no isolated case. In every Muslim area within the USSR, historians on orders of the Communist Party have rewritten history to distort the facts so that the Russians appear always in a good light. Needless to say, histories which present the facts truthfully have been withdrawn and destroyed, so that the present and future generations of Muslims are forever denied the chance of learning the true facts of their nation's past." End quote. And I find that to be an extremely important statement and an extremely interesting document to have located. Whether what it is saying about the Russian blame or whatever is true is irrelevant at this point. What is relevant is that not only does it acknowledge the existence of Tartaria, and it clearly portrays Tartaria as being a nation, otherwise it would not have had a Tatar Provincial Committee there. And that's very significant, folks. So not only does it confirm the existence of Tartaria as a nation, but it also confirms the rewriting and deliberate obfuscation of Tartarian history as recently as 1944. You know, and a couple of shows ago, it may even have been on the last show, I suggested that World War I and World War II were actually the last wars for Tartaria, that the battle was still going on up until then, and this CIA document goes a long way to supporting that hypothesis. And even in saying that, it's very important for people to understand that what we are presenting with this whole concept of Tartaria, the whole concept of this being a worldwide culture, the concept of there being free energy, all of the things that we've talked about in the last few shows and a lot of the things that a lot of people are talking about, it's very important for people to keep it in context and realize that this is a hypothesis. We don't know what happened. We're piecing it together and we're trying to figure it out. And being that it is a hypothesis, it's very important that people keep true to the facts in what information they're presenting to people and keep everything above board. Don't put false concepts and false ideas out there. Don't stretch the truth. Sure, okay, put concepts out there, but make sure they are presented as being a hypothesis. Be very, very careful of what you are stating as fact, because this is a very, very important issue. It's extremely important. And being that it is such an important issue, it's imperative that we do not muddy the waters with this information. And by wanting things to be true, wanting our ideas to be true, and cherry-picking information or falsifying information to make our ideas or our hypothesis seem more acceptable and seem more true, because all we do by doing that is muddy the waters. And having said that, what I want to address is the concept of free energy being supplied by Tartarian buildings. Now, this is a very, very real possibility that this is what these buildings were doing. But having said that, we don't know that that's what they were doing. And there has been a certain amount of, frankly, disinformation being released about Tartarian energy buildings, namely the report that was put out by someone, I'm not sure who, But it was put out, I've got the video sent to me so many times by so many people. It's called Tartary Ether. And there's a few copies of it online now. It seems to have been mirrored by a lot of people. And it talks about the giraffe enclosure in Berlin Zoo and how this is suspected to be a still-operating Tartarian power station because of the feeling of euphoria that one experiences when you're in the Berlin Zoo. And I really do wish to address this because this information has been released by someone who's actually obfuscated the truth a little bit on how the event was reported by the person who reported it. There was a woman who went to the Berlin Zoo, and she felt kind of good while she was there. And while she was there, she noticed one of these buildings in the giraffe enclosure, and she'd been researching mudflood and this sort of stuff. When she looked at the building, she wondered if that was one of the buildings people were talking about. She had commented to a friend how she felt quite good when she got to the zoo, and then she noticed the building and just happened to wonder if that was one of the buildings. And this has been misconstrued to her actually saying that she felt good in the zoo because of the building. She's actually written to me and expressed her dismay at this. She never said that she felt good because of the building. She never even speculated that the building was a Tartarian power station. She simply saw the spires and wondered if it was one of the buildings that she'd heard mentioned on the reports that she'd been listening to and watching regarding the mud flood. She had commented that she felt really good while she was there in the zoo simply because she'd been going through a particularly bad time. Her daughter had got into a lot of trouble, apparently been assaulted or something like that, and she'd gone to Berlin to get her daughter out of trouble. She was in a very, very stressed out situation, and when she got to the zoo and she got among the trees in the zoo, she kind of felt like she was home in Dakota, and she felt relaxed and much more comfortable in that area, in that space of the zoo, sitting amongst the trees. She happened to look up and notice this giraffe enclosure and thought, oh, I wonder if that's one of the buildings that they're talking about on the mudflood video. And that whole thing was misconstrued to portray the concept that this woman went to the zoo, noticed this building, and then associated with the feeling of euphoria she was feeling. She wasn't feeling a feeling of euphoria. She was simply able to remove some of the stress she'd been feeling because of the incidents of the morning that had led her to that place. Just sitting amongst the trees, she was able to let the stress fall away. And she noticed the building at the same time. And that's it. And she is quite concerned that she's been misquoted in that video, and that video appears to be going quite viral around the world based on the claim that this woman felt this particular energy from the power station in the Berlin Zoo. And folks, she didn't feel anything from the power station. She's actually written me a letter and asked me if I would please mention this on the show because she wants this cleared up. She did ask for that quote to be removed from the video before it was published, but whoever published the video did not remove the quote. Actually, a good deal of the video seems to be based around that experience that she had, and she says that that entire experience has been misconstrued, taken out of context, and what is being presented in that video is not what actually happened at the zoo. It is not what she experienced. So I just thought I would put that out there on her behalf, and hopefully that will clear up some of this noise that's happening around this issue, because as I said, this is a very, very important issue, folks. I find it absolutely compelling, the concept of this lost culture of Tartaria, and I think it's a very, very important issue. And as I said, it's easy to get excited about these things when we find them out, and then to go making all sorts of wild claims and speculations. And I've actually picked up on that story of the energy being emitted by the still operating power station at the Berlin Zoo myself, because of that quote that someone put out there. I mean, I do suspect that a lot of these buildings are capable of producing power and producing energy, but is that one still operating? That's the question. Can that feeling actually be experienced by going to the Berlin Zoo? That's the question. And these are the sorts of things that we need to actually go there and do hands-on research and investigation ourselves, rather than simply making wild claims, because these sorts of claims can undermine the entire field of research when they're made and they're not based in truth. And that appears to be what's happening with a lot of this research, and it's very important that people don't make false claims and to let people know when they are hypothesizing. It's very important, folks. That's why I always present the shows the way I do. I always ask questions. I don't make claims on the videos. I make very, very few claims anyway. I'm mainly trying to encourage people to ask questions and simply going with my random thought flow and seeing where it leads. But this is a huge mystery. I mean, what happened with Tartaria and the fact that this nation was there and what they were probably capable of, it's a huge mystery to all of us. We're just unraveling it at the moment, and all we've done is scratch the surface. So before making any wild claims, it's very, very important that people look deeper and put things in perspective. And continuing along that line of hypothesizing and wild claims and whatever, a couple of shows ago, perhaps the last show, I suggested that they may be hiding land. I suggested that we consider the concepts that were put forth by Admiral Byrd, who said that there was extra land above the North Pole and below the South Pole. And no, folks, this doesn't mean the Earth is flat. You can talk about extra land without believing the Earth is flat, okay? But an interesting thing in this, as many people have been reporting lately, is the old maps of Hyperborea, which depict the North Pole, apparently depict the North Pole free of ice, and they showed land at the North Pole. They also show Greenland free of ice and quite well mapped, and also Iceland free of ice and quite well mapped as well. But something else that they show, even if you don't want to consider the concept of that North Pole being there, these are reasonably accurate maps. They show river systems, towns, cities, mountains, all sorts of stuff on these maps. They're quite well drawn. But what it does show on these maps, and this was pointed out by a YouTube user by the name of John Levi, who does some really wonderful videos. He has a wonderfully open mind. I've just discovered his channel. He's got a very calm demeanor, a very nice, open way of explaining things, and I really must compliment him on the work that he's done. But one video that I saw of his, it talks about land that is on the maps that show Hyperborea. There's a land called Friesland, which is on the map, but is not on any other maps. Well, it's not on any modern maps anyway. And, of course, I will leave a link below if you happen to be watching this on YouTube, but the important thing about this is that Friesland doesn't appear to just be some random island. I mean, it's quite well marked with towns and river systems and mountains and everything you would expect in a well-mapped country. And it was obviously important enough to be included in a little side section on the map, and so up to other places on the map as well. One is called Sierra Sewell, and one is called Sketland. And each one of these latter two is simply a tiny little archipelago right down on the edge of the map. And these are also important enough to have warranted their own little blown-up areas on the corners of the map. And yet when you look at modern maps, these places, these islands, do not exist, and one may wonder why that is. I mean, there are two small island archipelagos in as much as the Faroe Islands and another island off the coast of Scotland, which could be these two archipelagos, but they look very different to the way they were mapped in the old days, so that's a chance that that is a possibility. But of course, even with that, the question would be, well, if these are just these two barren rocks that are there off the coast of Scotland now, then why were they considered important enough to be given their own devoted sections on this old map of Hyperborea? And even if this is the case with these archipelagos still on modern maps, Friesland is simply nowhere to be found. And the thing is that it's not just on maps of Hyperborea, the maps of the North Pole. There's other maps that you can find that actually depict the UK and the edge of Europe, which also show Friesland on the map. And when you look at them, they actually display the UK and the edge of Europe quite accurately. I mean, still discrepancies that aren't quite right, but reasonably accurate given the time of the map. And putting an island on there that doesn't exist, such as Friesland, is not really consistent with the level of accuracy that we see in the rest of the map. And again, the point is that we also find this depicted on more than one map. So it's not like it's simply been depicted in someone's fantasy of what the North Pole looked like, and it's just included on maps of Hyperborea. It's on other maps as well. And Friesland, really, I mean, it's half the size of Iceland, it's half the size of England, it's around about the size of Ireland. And it's depicted as being quite close to the United Kingdom, where it's depicted on the maps anyway. One might question whether these places are actually there, and if they're not there, what happened to them? Very interestingly, the maps of Hyperborea change quite quickly. If you look at maps from around the 1595 period, you'll find that there are four very distinctive places marked in the map of Hyperborea, And yet when we get to 1606, just 11 years later, it would appear that much of one section appears to have been flooded or gone beneath the waves, and some of the islands nearby seem to have disappeared as well. The question is, what happened? And as I said, that's over an 11-year period between 1595 and 1606. But then you look at maps from around 1622 to 1628, and there's nothing depicted in the centre. All the four landmasses are gone, but you can still find on these maps from 1628, right down there in the corner is Friesland. So it's still there. And you've got to ask yourself, how easy would it be to hide a country? Well, all you really have to do would be take it off the map, and if the country was in a spot where no flight paths actually went over it, then you'd got a reasonably good chance of keeping it out of the view of everybody. And if you look at where Friesland is, there's no real flight paths to go over that area of ocean at all. And it's just an interesting concept that there may be something there that nobody knows about. It'd be hard to go and look at too, and it's in the North Sea. What are you going to do, fly out there in a light aircraft? It's not really going to give you enough fuel to get back again, and going out there in a boat to just check it out to see if there was something there. I mean, this is the North Sea. It's not exactly a friendly environment that anyone is going to want to go and investigate to see if there is a hypothetical landmass there. So if you're going to hide a country, you know, it would be a pretty good place to do it. Not saying that it's there. It's just interesting that these maps exist. And the thing is, I mean, you might look at these maps and say, well, these are just fiction, but these maps are made by people such as Phineas, people such as Makeda. These are very, very respected cartographers who have been around for a long time, maps that we're still using today by some of these people, such as Makeda, still making world atlases today. These were the most respected cartographers of the time. And here they clearly show this country at the North Pole, and they clearly show the island of Friesland and the archipelagos of Sarah Sewell and Scotland. As I said, Sarah Sewell could be the Faroe Islands and Scotland could be this other archipelago that's off the coast of Scotland. But what about Friesland and what about the lands that are depicted at being at the North Pole? I mean, are we to simply believe that the most respected cartographers of the time simply put in islands that didn't exist and put them on the map and mapped them so well with river systems and towns and mountains and everything clearly marked, even the names of certain bays, and just made it up and they got it all wrong? And yet these are, as I said, the most respected cartographers of their day, and cartographers whose legacies, such as Makeda, are still respected map makers and respected cartographers today. Are we to assume that they simply made a mistake by putting an island like Friesland there? And also by clearly mapping the region at the North Pole, which actually doesn't exist. And bear in mind, folks, that as I said, one of the maps that clearly shows the North Pole and Friesland is a Makeda map. Oh, sorry, we got that wrong. It didn't exist. It was actually part of somewhere else. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, folks. And again, you know, I'm not saying that this land is there. I'm simply finding it interesting that this land is on the maps, exists on these old maps, and was so well mapped. I've always found these sorts of things fascinating. As I've said, history was what first got me into this whole quest for truth way back in the beginning. I've always found these old maps to be quite intriguing, the fact that they show countries that apparently aren't there, and the fact that they're made by respected cartographers. You know, it doesn't really make sense, folks. And the interesting thing about it, as I said, is that when you see the maps of the North Pole where the four landmasses have been removed, you still see Friesland on these maps. So what's going on there? And if it was simply a place that was there and isn't there now, well, why haven't we heard about it? Why didn't we hear about this place that sunk beneath the waves? You know, when you look at all of this stuff, what you begin to realize is that none of our history is correct. That's the important part about it. Looking into all this is that the amount of inconsistencies you find begin to cause you to ask questions. And that's the important thing that people need to be doing, is asking questions. Now, if you ask the right questions, you can encourage people to ask the right questions, then the right answers will present themselves by default. It's just getting to the right question. You know, and that is truly one of the big problems that we face today, is that people simply don't question. They don't ask enough questions. They simply roll over on command and do what they're told and never ask why. Now, if people were to look at the system and simply ask why their lives are in the state that it's in, it would probably make a difference as well. But people don't even pay attention to that. They just think it's normal for them to be living in this state of debt slavery. It's what they've grown up with, so it's what they think reality is. And they never question it. They never ask about the monetary system. They never ask why they have to pay to be alive and why we are constantly at war all the time and why things just continue to get harder and more difficult. You know, if we have societies that are constructed to serve people, why is it that people are discarded so easily and so readily and so often within the constructs of these societies? Now, these are questions people need to ask, and they just don't. They're so busy running on the treadmill, collecting the paper they need to pay to be alive, that they never ask why that fee is required, why they have to pay in the first place. They just think that it's just the way things are, because that's the way the world works. But it isn't, folks. It's the way the world has been constructed, and it's a very, very insidious system that could be healed very quickly. You know, we could stop all of this very quickly. I've said so many times we could heal the world in a day if people simply woke up to themselves. And that has been the point of these shows right since the beginning, is attempting to get people to wake up to themselves and simply see the fiction that they're swimming in. And see how easily we could change this and how easily we could free ourselves from this control, but how easily we could stop all these wars and stop all this destruction and move in a better direction. I mean, it wouldn't be hard to do, folks. Most people think it's an insurmountable problem, but it isn't. You know, it's our compliance and our tolerance of evil, our tolerance of wrong behavior that causes this whole system to function. If we stop doing that, if we actually step into our moral compass, then the system can't function. It's really that simple. You know, in fact, it's so simple that people can't see the forest for the trees. That's the problem. You know, people want change, but they don't want to change. It's always really been the same old thing, hasn't it? But anyway, folks, I think we have reached break time here, so I better leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, so I find all of this stuff about history to be incredibly interesting, all these old maps to be incredibly interesting, and who knows, if enough people can throw ideas around and investigate this stuff enough, perhaps we will get to the bottom of the rabbit hole and find out what's really going on here. But again, through all of this sort of stuff, even with investigating these sorts of things, it's fun to do. I totally enjoy looking at these sorts of things, but through it all, it's still very important not to lose focus of the world around us, not to lose focus of what the governments are doing, not to lose focus of this smart grid, the 5G system, and everything that is being rolled out around us. But the thing is, you know, a lot of it is interconnected. Even when you look at things such as the concept of the mud flood, whether this was possible and what caused it, and even when it was caused, I mean, I've suggested that it may have happened around 1840, and there is evidence to suggest that, but there's also evidence to suggest that it may have happened around 1600, or perhaps there was two of them. Who knows? But again, if it did actually happen, and evidence would suggest it did, then what caused it is another very interesting question. I mean, it could have been a perfectly natural event, or it's possibly it was done through sonic frequencies, it's possibly it was done through electromagnetism, possibly it was a plasma discharge. I mean, we have no real idea of knowing how it happened. But it's also possible that this whole electronic system, the 5G grid, is being set up to do that. You know, sometimes when I look at the fracking and some of the stuff that's going on as well, I wonder what this is about, whether the fracking is a setup for a new type of mud flood scenario. I mean, what are they doing with all these holes? They don't need the gas that they apparently are pulling out of these fracking wells. They don't need it. There's no real reason for them to be doing it. But the noticeable thing is that they're drilling these huge deep holes and they're filling it full of toxic water and poison. I mean, what are they doing? Are they setting it up for a new event? Are they priming for a mud flood? You know, recently I also spoke about the fact that the waters are receding, all of the oceans are receding. And this is true, water levels around the world are dropping, and many people suspect that there is an underwater ocean beneath this ocean, and that this ocean is kind of leaking through the crust into that ocean. Perhaps that could bubble up at some stage. Now, when you look at that and you combine it with what we are doing with the fracking, the amount of chemicals that are going into the wells, the grand solar minimum, everything that is on the cards, folks, there's a lot of stuff happening at the moment. We're in a very, very interesting point in history, and I think a lot of what we're seeing on the surface is designed to distract us from this so that we won't notice what's going on around us. We'll think the politics is all real, and we'll just keep running on the treadmill and collecting our paper and being good little drones and not really paying attention to the world around us. A lot of people still think Q's coming to save the day, which I find to be quite remarkable. I mean, it's past November, folks, and nobody's been arrested, so perhaps that should be a sign for people. Remember, he said November, it was all going to be a big mass arresting, it was all going to be wonderful, and the world was all going to change in November. Of course, people will say, oh, no, he didn't say that, but, well, he did. So one might question why that isn't happening, folks. I mean, it's just theatre for the masses. How people can think the state is going to save them from the state really does boggle my mind a little bit. And it's the same saviour program that people have been running for years, folks. Everyone expecting the white knight on the horse to come along and save them, but it's not going to happen. The only way humankind is going to get itself out of this predicament is if we stop complying with our own slavery. We're seeing this happening in France at the moment with the riots and the yellow vests in France, but of course even this seems to have been co-opted as well. As soon as they get a colour involved, you know that there's someone in there spinning things and getting involved. I mean, these colour revolutions really never seem to go in the right direction. And if it's the working class standing up against the government, then why are they smashing shop windows and destroying businesses of the small working class? You know, there may be people in there that are doing the right thing and really want to see change, but of course you get these agent provocateurs in there, which turn it into a violent uprising to destroy the economy and continue the same old agenda, which is what it does. Now, a revolution, a violent revolution, where you're destroying your local infrastructure is never going to go well, and it's never going to lead your country to freedom. There are better ways to do things. So when you look at this yellow vest so-called revolution in France, you've really got to see that there are elements in there that are probably good, but there's a lot of elements in there that are leading it exactly where the government wants it to go, as they always do with these so-called uprisings, folks. And the point is, you know, even with some of what we're seeing in France, I mean, sure, we're seeing non-compliance, not complying with toll fees and all sorts of stuff like that, but the thing is, people don't really need to go to the streets to riot. All they really need to do is stay home and look after their families and not support the system in that way. You know, simple non-compliance would change things. And so much of this, so much of these revolutions and these violent uprisings, so much of it is a distraction as well, folks, from what's going on around people. I mean, all of these violent uprisings, all the stuff they're protesting against, it's not stopping the 5G grid, it's not stopping the social crediting system. All it's doing is undermining the country and bringing about the need for a police state to be introduced in France. That's what will happen, simply because, like I said earlier, they're destroying small businesses and things. I mean, why are you smashing shopfront windows if your problem is with the government? What's the point of smashing other small businesses out of existence and creating hardship for the working class? Isn't the revolution about creating freedom for the working class? So why all the violence? You just don't need this sort of stuff. It doesn't lead anywhere. It's a play. Violent uprising will not solve anything. You know, the bombs couldn't be made if we didn't work in the bomb factories. If we didn't fly the planes and drop the bombs, then the bombs wouldn't be dropped. If we didn't shoot the bullets, then the people wouldn't die from the bullets. If we didn't support the government, then the government couldn't do what it's doing. You know, the government has created this whole fictional system, this whole meme, this whole idea that they have authority and that we need these people. And so we approach things in the wrong way when trying to free ourselves from this system. You know, it's just people here, folks, and we don't have to do any of this, and we don't need any violence. But, you know, again, it just distracts us from a lot of the stuff that's around us. And with all of this stuff coming out about history now, you know, so many things coming out about the mud flood, hidden technology, some of the stuff that was very likely possible before the destruction of Tartaria. And even with this, folks, we don't know. We don't know. We don't know that Tartaria was a peaceful country. We don't know that there was a worldwide peaceful society. It may have been a worldwide tyrannical society. We simply don't know. But what we're finding evidence of is free energy devices, the fact that churches and buildings can harvest this type of energy. Last week I was talking about the research that I found on Martin Liedtke's channel regarding the fasci, the fascies that you see behind the politicians in the White House and all this sort of stuff, that these were possibly energy weapons. Recently, again, since that show, I found a video by, again, John Levi, the man I was mentioning before, who was referencing a Russian video where, I think it's a Russian video anyway, where a couple of young guys had created a homemade fascia out of a microwave oven, and I'll be sure to put a link to that in the description as well. And that's incredibly interesting, folks, because it shows you directed energy weapons are real. You can make one yourself out of a microwave oven. And if people are going to ask, well, what is causing the fires in California, is it possible for them to be hitting the homes with directed energy weapons? Well, yes, it is, because you can make a directed energy weapon yourself out of a microwave. So when you think about that, consider what the military applications for this are, and consider how the military would have refined this type of technology and what they could possibly be using it for. And it shows how the fascia used to work, and it shows the type of directed energy technology, directed energy weapons that they are very likely using to create these fires all around the world. And again, I'll put the link to that in the video below. It's a very, very revealing video. It's about halfway through this video by John Levi. And the name of that video, I think, was Free Energy Magnetron. And again, I'll put a link below if you happen to be watching this on YouTube. It was quite fascinating, folks, and it's actually a very good active demonstration of exactly what I was referring to last week in regard to the electric fascia, and very much supports the idea and the research that was put forth by Martin Liebke in regard to these devices. So there's an awful lot of information coming out now, folks. There's an awful lot of information coming out. It's very important in looking at it all to see what's real and what isn't, and what we can use and what we can't. What is this information and what is not this information? You know, in looking at all of this stuff, it's important to consider all options, but to believe none. Take it all on as a possibility, but don't say, well, this is, and use that as your focus to guide you in whatever direction you think you should go. Simply pull at the threads and see where they lead you. Because it's a wondrous world, and we've been born into an incredibly important time in human history, I would suggest anyway. You know, the changes that we're seeing to the human condition at the moment are profound. Changes like we've never seen before, not in living memory of me anyway. And things are so different to what people believe. They really are. As I said last week, there's a war that's being waged against us, and the problem is that nobody really knows it's happening. Now, we're being attacked on all fronts. We're being poisoned. We're being electromagnetically poisoned. We're poisoned from the moment of birth through our food, through vaccinations and everything they do to us. Our lifespans have been reduced drastically, and there's all sorts of weirdness happening on the horizon. And you can tell simply by the fact that they're escalating things so much, ramping up the theater of distraction so much that people simply won't notice what's going on around them. You know, we're just taught to be distracted all the time. We're taught to measure ourselves by artificial, superficial parameters, and we're taught not to really notice what's happening. But when you step back from all that and look around you, you find that there are major changes happening in the world. There's a major feeling of discontent among the people as well. There's a major feeling that something needs to change, something is about to happen. A lot of people are sick of this existence that our governments have forced us to endure, and they know that there must be something more. A lot of people are disillusioned by government, which is why we're seeing so much theatre from government. They needed to put someone like Trump in there, this big bright face, to make the world think there is some relevance in politics, but really there isn't. The whole thing is theatre for the masses, and all of these people work together, and the whole thing has been a massive distraction. Look what they've done with Brexit, keep people waiting on this big exit from the European Union for the last few years, and now they say, well, maybe it's not going to happen at all. And, you know, it's just another saviour program. People have been sitting back doing nothing and allowing Theresa May to continue bombing all these countries and supplying weapons to Saudi Arabia so they can destroy Yemen, wipe out all the population and infrastructure there, and waiting for this big change to happen when Brexit occurs. But it's just, as I said, another saviour program. Now they're saying it mightn't even happen, and even if it does happen, and England leaves the European Union, well, then you'll have the Chinese One Belt, One Road system come marching out, which will cause all of these massive trade tariffs on Britain, so Britain will go down the tube economically that way, just to teach the people a lesson of what happens when you try to stand up for yourself, so they'll all want to rejoin the EU at that point anyway. So they've got that in the bag if they can't convince the people to cancel Brexit. And you can't tell them that the politicians can't see this. They know the Chinese One Belt, One Road system is coming online, and what's going to happen to the UK if they leave the European Union at this crucial trade point. And Trump has been continuing to isolate the United States as much as he can, putting trade tariffs against people, trade wars everywhere, trying to get the upper hand on everybody, running the whole world as a business, and essentially isolating the United States from the rest of the world and giving the rest of the world the excuse it needs to pull away from the United States and enter the Chinese One Belt, One Road system. So all of this is going on in the background. And of course, what you're going to see, of course, for security reasons, to protect us all against terrorism, is that people who trade with China and enter this system will end up adopting the exact same social crediting system that China has put in place. This is how they introduce it to the countries via trade, via anti-terrorism, by doing what is good for you and keeping you safe. And really, it's all about surveillance and it's all about control. And none of it's changing. Even while we're researching all this mudflood stuff, even while we're looking at Tartaria and looking at what our history could have been, in discovering what our history was, more importantly, is what we're doing. All of this stuff is still going on. And again, like I said, even in looking at all of this history and looking at all of this stuff, it's imperative that people keep a focus and, sure, put ideas out there, but be careful what they are claiming is truth. Because ultimately, we don't know. All we know is that there was once a great nation that was called Tartaria that appears to have encompassed large sections of the world. We know that there was an ancient culture that built buildings all around the world because all of the buildings that exist all around the world are the same. They're all built by the same people. I mean, and that is obvious. So we know this has happened. We know that there's a very good possibility that there was some type of cataclysmic event that happened around about 200 years ago and possibly another one that happened 200 years before that. Perhaps these are events that happen every 200 years. I mean, who knows? Who would know what is really going on in the history of this world? Because another thing that we've figured out, another thing that I am absolutely convinced of, is that all the history we've been given is wrong. Because as I've said many times, I've spent so many years researching ancient history and none of it has ever made sense to me. I've been trying to piece pieces together in my life for the last 40 or 50 years and nothing has ever made sense until I factor in the reality that the timeline is wrong, that everything that was supposed to have happened thousands of years ago actually happened quite recently, and that this lost civilization that we can see all around the world was a very recent civilization. Once I factor that in, suddenly all the pieces of the puzzle fall into place. So for me, that is a very significant point. And it's a point that I can't really ignore. So a lot of things are being revealed at the moment, but like I said, through it all, we can speculate, sure, we can put our pieces on the table and see what we come up with, but be careful what you believe and be careful what you want to believe and be careful of cherry-picking information. You need to put all the information on the table and consider it all so we can get rid of all the loose ends. But be careful of wanting things to be true too much and believing your own theories. You know, belief is the enemy of knowledge, and a theory will always be a theory until it is proven to be a fact, and then no belief is required because then it becomes a knowing. And it's really important to keep that focus and to always keep an open mind in every single thing that we're looking at. And like I said, be careful of wanting too much for something to be true. If we can keep that focus and look at things continually open-mindedly and consider all options, but believe none, then we will eventually find out what the real truth is. And I think we're heading close to that now, folks. I think we're going to find the real truth in my lifetime. I think things are soon going to be revealed. Perhaps when we get to 2020, perhaps that's when we will all get 2020 vision and we'll be able to see the world clearly. Who knows? Perhaps 2012 was a starting point. I mean, I've always thought that. I've always thought that 2012 was not a non-event, that there was a shift when that happened. There was a shift in consciousness and it began a cycle. And that cycle must end at some point, and perhaps that will end in 2020. And again, that's just a speculation, folks. It's not a savior program. I'm not suggesting that people sit back and wait for something major to happen in 2020. I do believe we need to participate in this world that we're living in, and I do believe we can make change at any time we choose to do so. So I like to consider all of these things, but again, I think it's very important that we remain active in all that we do. And it would seem the peacock agrees with me. Sorry about the peacock chiming in so much, folks. There tends to be quite a few animal noises attempting to get shows done in the area that I live. We've got a few peacocks that have moved into the yard and they're quite happy to be there, and it's a nice feeling having them around. It's kind of a bit of a compliment, really, that they've decided to move in here. It's good feeling to know that the wildlife feel comfortable with the place. But anyway, getting off topic there. As I've said so many times on the show, folks, all the world is a stage, and so even looking at all of this stuff, I mean, it's incredibly inspiring looking at all of this Tartaria information, the concept of the mud flood, the concept that our history's been changed, the missing timeline, Fomenko's work, all of this stuff. When you put it all together, it's incredibly compelling and it's very exciting. But again, be careful what you want to believe, and be careful of what energy you get yourself in looking at all this stuff as well. I mean, some of this can be very depressing. Even when you look at the concept of free energy and what we possibly had when Tartaria was a thriving culture, it can be quite depressing. You can get quite sad about it. So it's important that you keep your energy high as well. You know, everything we've been told is mixed up and lied and convoluted. The histories have been shifted around everywhere. And when you start looking at all this stuff, you've got to kind of remove yourself and look at it from a third-party perspective and realize that you're just here for the ride. You're just here for the journey. And it's what you do with that information, and it's the energetic state that you're in through the ride which determines what the journey is going to be and what the outcome of the ride is going to be. You know, your energetic state and the way you interact with the world around you is all important through all of this stuff, and indeed that's how we could free ourselves from the system. I mean, like I keep saying, non-compliance, even that, it's all about the energetic state that you're in. Whether you believe you have masters, whether you believe you are a slave, whether you believe you need to question authority or simply do what you're told unconditionally because you feel you have to. You know, it's all about the inner you in all of this, and it's through the inner you that you'll find the way out, and it's through the inner you and your inner knowings and your inner understandings that you can see the way through all this mess and all through all this mess of information that we're getting as well. Because there's so much information coming out, you've got to wonder how much of it has been contrived. How are we being led to the conclusions that we're coming to as well? It's very important to consider that. And this is something I have to consider all the time when I find new information online, or I have new information come to me, or I come to a new idea or a new conclusion about something, and then I start researching it and I find other people doing the same thing. I have to question, well, why didn't I see this before? Why are so many other people seeing it now? Has the information been put there? Are we being fed breadcrumbs to lead us to a certain point? Are the thoughts I'm having really my own? Are the conclusions that I'm coming to really my conclusions that I'm coming to by really looking at the evidence? Or am I simply being led to these conclusions by following the opinions and the beliefs of others? So you've got to really look at all this. And like I said, it's very exciting when looking at this information, and so it's very easy to get caught up in that wave of belief and that wave of wanting things to be true and allowing yourself to be led to certain conclusions that may not necessarily be your own. You know, and I can say that, and I can totally admit that, sure, I've got things that I would like to be true. I would like to see that this is what happened. I would like to see that this is what happened. I'd like to be right in some of the things that I'm saying. But I can't honestly say that I know that I am. And it's important that other researchers also admit that as well. And that's why it's so important that we come together with all of this stuff and put all of our cards on the table and all look at each other's research and compare notes and do so without arguing. Without pushing ideas across and saying, I am right, you are wrong, you must believe what I say because I've got the idea, I've got the picture, I've connected the dots, you haven't. It's important that we don't do that. And so many people do that in the independent media, and that's the problem. But there's so much stuff coming out now, and if we can adopt the right approach to this and respect each other through this and allow people to think differently and consider each other's information, I really believe we have a real fighting chance of getting to a very, very positive future. I think that those who are controlling things, I think their days are numbered. And if enough people wake up, they're not really going to have much other opportunity other than to jump ship. And I'd really like to see that happen, folks. I'd really like to see us achieve freedom. And I think that if we are prudent about our actions at this time and we are respectful of each other, we have a real opportunity for freedom. So that's just something that I'd like to put out there for people to humbly consider. And, well, we are getting very close to that time again, folks, where we have reached the end of the show. As many of you may have noticed in watching these video clips, very often when I do these radio shows every week, I kind of run out of time halfway through the editing process because I've been just so rushed lately. And I revert to an old graphic that I created way back about 15 years ago before we even had widescreen computers. And I get a lot of questions about this graphic because this graphic runs a whole bunch of text across the screen at certain points and it's in a language a lot of people don't know. And a lot of people accuse me of trying to put subliminal programming in them and all sorts of rubbish that they come up with. People that live in Shapefear, folks that haven't figured out they could simply turn the monitor off and listen to the radio show if they're scared of the images. But anyway, a lot of people are worried about this text that I often use simply because I run out of time and I can't do video editing. So I just put on a nice graphic for you to amuse yourself with for the rest of this show. And as I said, a lot of people are worried about the text. So what I'm going to do at the end of this radio show, if you're watching this on YouTube, if you leave the video run for a little bit after I finish speaking, I'm going to put all of the translations of that text that I'm using at the end of the video so you can satisfy yourself that I'm not subliminally programming you to be a Satanist or something. I mean, this is the sort of stuff that people come up with. I don't know why people believe themselves to be so easily programmed and so easily manipulated. I would suggest that is a program they're running as well. But again, folks, if you're scared of the images that I use in the video, if you've been programmed into Shapefear, then please just turn your monitor off and listen to the sound or just go and download the podcast or something. It's a lot easier than making false accusations against people and living your life in a state of paranoia due to Shapefear. And to follow a little bit on last week's information that I gave you about being hacked, I did get hacked rather badly, folks. What happened to me was someone actually got into my system and deleted all of my hard drives back to unallocated tables. I literally had to go and buy a new hard drive, install a new operating system on it, and then gradually reconnect my other old hard drives. And as I reconnected them, all of them were basically unrecognized by the system, reduced back to unallocated tables the way they are when I buy them. So it was quite a good hack. Whoever got into my system managed to delete everything. So I've lost an incredible amount of work. I have lost about 4 years' work that I've done on the films. I've lost my scripts. I've lost so much stuff. I do still have the raw data on other hard drives that were not connected to the system. So that's good. And I do have a lot of the stuff that I use for my regular weekly shows, the video footage and stuff that I have for that, I do have that all backed up on my laptop. But most of the major information that I had stored on my machines has all disappeared, so that is quite disturbing. Bit of a blow to the system, but hey, what do? We start again. That's all we really can do in that sort of a situation. Also, if you're a YouTube subscriber, I'm having a lot of trouble with my account. If you're someone out there and you think I've deleted your comment, I haven't. It's probably in the spam bin. The problem is I cannot access my spam bin to approve any comments. I can go into the bin and I can see, like on one particular clip, I can see that there's 66 comments in the spam bin. But I can't see them. I just have a blank page. And if I click show more, I just get the same show more button. I never get to see the comments. And another message that I got from YouTube just yesterday is that they intend to delete a whole bunch of subscribers for being spam accounts. So do not be surprised if your subscription has been deleted from my account. I've actually watched the count drop by about 500 subscribers today. So there's a good chance you've been unsubscribed from the channel due to YouTube's actions. And as I said, if you cannot find your comment on my channel, there is a good chance it's in the spam bin and there's simply nothing I can do about it. So please just bear with me on that. We do what we can, but YouTube does not make it very easy for us at all. But apart from all that, as I've mentioned many times before, I'll be speaking at Anacapulco in February. That's from the 17th to the 20th of February. I'm also doing a gig in Coffs Harbour, Australia on the 18th of January this year, and I'll be doing another gig in Byron Bay on the 19th of January, and you'll find information for those gigs on my website. There are a couple of banners there where you can go and find out about those two gigs. And thank you to all of the wonderful people who send me so many emails. As I mentioned earlier, I get so many emails that it's becoming extremely difficult to answer them, so please bear with me on that. And thank you very much to my Patreon supporters because you are the ones who keep this show going. Without you, none of this would be possible at all, and I really cannot thank you enough for the support you've shown me over the years and for your efforts to keep this show on the air. But that is it for me, folks. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.